Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Last night in Brookline, town meeting members voted to rename a K-8 school, the Edward S. Devotion School, because its namesake was an 18th century slave owner. The change comes as a part of the continuing conversation about how this nation portrays and memorializes, or doesn't, its history of slavery. And that conversation is moving into the art world. Curators at the Worcester Art Museum have installed new permanent signs to tell visitors which people in early American portraits owned enslaved people or benefited from slavery. And WBUR's arts reporter Maria Garcia joins us now with more. Hello, Maria.
Hi, Meghna.
So you've been to the Worcester Art Museum.
I have.
Describe some of these portraits for us.
So they're early American portraits, mostly of the 17th and 18th century. And they're basically portraits that wealthy people commissioned for themselves or for their families. They're meant to convey themes of military prowess and affluence, the power of trade and mercantile exchange. And so these portraits are meant to convey not just appearance, but also the best self of the sitter, right? How they want to remember their legacy.
Monuments to themselves, right?
Right.
So give us an example here.
So there's one portrait of a man named John Boers, and it was painted by John Singleton Copley. Copley, as we know, very well-known painter in colonial America, probably born in Boston, one of the most prominent artistic figures in New England. And he celebrated for not just showing the physicality of his sitters, right, but also conveying their psychological state, their emotional disposition at the time. And so he painted a man named John Boers, and Copley portrayed Boers as a man of sort of quiet intelligence in this very pensive moment. And he's wearing this like lush velvet suit, sitting in this like luxurious mahogany chair. And in the original signage for the portrait, Boers is described as a respected citizen of Newport, Rhode Island.
Ah, interesting. So what's the history then that we're not seeing when we look at this Copley portrait of Boers?
So the new sign informs us that Boers owned an enslaved person named Cato, and that Cato fought in the American Revolution, and that Cato was valued at about 120 pounds at the time. Huh. There's another painting, Meghna, that shows a man named Russell Sturgis. And again, Sturgis is in this very stately pose. He looks very pensive, a man of like deep intellect, right? And there are these cultural signifiers that he's wearing, basically his clothing, elegant stole furs, fine materials. And that's important because in these portraits, the clothing, again, they're cultural signifiers that tell us about a person's wealth, how they made their money, their occupation. And the new sign next to Sturgis's portrait tells us that his family money in part came from a business in Haiti that trafficked in flour, horses, and enslaved people.
Right. So those material, that material wealth or those riches didn't just appear in a vacuum. They have a story and an origin that has to do with enslaved people. Well, what did curators tell you about this new signage and how it's helping viewers better understand both the sitter and the art itself?
Right. So I spoke with the curator, Erin Corrales-Diaz, and here she is speaking about her predecessor who actually installed the signs a few months ago.
She created labels to intervene and to bring attention and a voice to those invisible people behind these sitters.
So again, Meghna, in these early American galleries that are placed in museums all over the country, right? There are galleries like this all over the U.S. We don't see a certain history, mainly the history of people of color, but that's not the only thing that's effaced in these portraits. Also hidden are the ways in which, again, these sitters benefited from slavery, even if they didn't own a slave, because our economy at that time was largely built on black bodies.
Hmm. Well, so, you know, before signage like this would open the eyes of visitors, I mean, museums were perceived or maybe supposed to be these sort of neutral spaces where you go to enjoy the artistic beauty of the portrait, for example. But when you know that piece of tape that you played from Diaz just a second ago, I mean, the signs are now making the art itself somewhat political, or the Worcester Art Museum into a more political space.
Right. So museum exists within the structural framework of inequality in this country, but I think what has happened for so long is the dominant narrative around cultural institutions has been that because they're the stewards of these cultural artifacts, right, these things, these physical manifestations that represent our shared humanity, that they sort of transcend space and political pressures and societal times, when really they don't. You know, museums operate within systemic biases within our society in the way they collect and in the way they present artifacts. And Art Magna really serves to frame history. It forms narratives that can deify people and ignore others. So before these signs were at the Worcester Art Museum, for example, a sitter was portrayed again for intellectual thought, economic success, military powers, but these signs really force us, challenge us to look beyond that and to analyze the sitters in their full complexity and reframe the way we perceive people in early American art.
So to that point, is it doing that at the Worcester Art Museum? I mean, did you talk to visitors who've seen the new signs?
I have. I've spoken to a few people. They said that the signs really forced them to spend more time in the gallery, and they were sort of taken aback by thinking about the accumulation of wealth in the North through Black bodies, right, which is not a super dominant narrative in history. And so, yeah, I've spoken to people who say, you know, they were sort of taken aback to see these signs suddenly.
Right. On the flip side to that, though, has the Worcester Art Museum had any pushback for the decision that it's made?
Mm-hmm. So the museum has not done an official audience evaluation. I haven't met anyone or heard from anyone who has objected, but I did speak to Elizabeth Athens, who is a curator who originally posted the signs. It was her idea, and she did all the research for it. And she told me that when the signs were first up, she did hear from a couple of people, she said, who sort of made comments, you know, that New England slavery was really different from Southern slavery, and that context maybe wasn't conveyed in the signs, and that Irish people were treated badly as well. So she heard a couple of comments like that, but she said that was mainly anomalous, and overall it's been positive. Hmm.
Well, we just got a couple seconds here, Maria, but so this is happening at the Worcester Art Museum. Any other institutions doing something like this, sort of giving that additional context to the art that they have?
So there aren't any other institutions that I know of. This kind of signage is not a big trend in the museum world, but there is a precedent for this. In 1992, artist Fred Wilson did a project that changed the way we perceive the museum. It was a seminal project called Mining the Museum, and he did this at the Maryland Historical Society, and he basically went through the society's artifacts that were in storage, stuff that the museum had accumulated but hadn't displayed, and there were a ton of artifacts that were related to slavery that were just in storage. And so he displayed those artifacts next to the actual artifacts that were already on display. So you had slave shackles next to these like beautiful 18th century ornate chairs.
Yeah.
And so that sort of set a precedent for thinking about the museum in these ways.
Well, that's WBUR Arts reporter Maria Garcia talking to us about new signage at the Worcester Art Museum, helping viewers get a deeper and more textured understanding of what they're seeing in key pieces of art there. Maria, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Magna.